Voices, off stage and on the air, performance number 521. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host, Rebecca Melanson.
Hello.
Hello. Nicole Shiro might make it. She's driving speedily in from Houston after watching somebody sing. She'll tell you when she gets here. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. If it's theater, it's on offstage and on the air. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
How
long? It is Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. It is Juneteenth. On the show today, we have Different Stages and their production of A Doll's House. And later on, we'll be talking to Reverie Theater Company and their show Outside Mullingar. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Austin, Boston, Chicago, and the regions. Stay with us.
Wonderful woman again.
Okay, we had an extended play of that song, which was really good, which was Hello Dolly, Rebecca Melanson.
That was intentional. We meant to do that.
Of course we did. Well, we did. I wanted folks to hear what that was. And that was the that you were listening to Cab Calloway and Pearl Bailey doing the African-American version of Hello Dolly, and that is in favor of Juneteenth today, which is the abolition of slavery, the celebration of the abolition of slavery, which has happened right here in the state of Tejas, as we call it.
Indeed.
Yeah, so and nodding doesn't work on the radio.
Y'all didn't hear that on the radio? Our audience did not hear me nod.
You didn't hear the wind passing by her microphone?
Oh, my gosh. So that's something new.
I'm checking in with you, Rebecca. How are you?
I am fabulous because...
You have news.
I passed my programmer's test. Yay. So now I'm an official co-op programmer.
Rebecca is a certified programmer, and I am just certifiable.
But I'm certified all because of you, because you taught me everything I know.
Everything I know. You are very good for my ego. thank you. And then we'll check in with Nicole at such time she gets here. If she gets here, she's busily driving. She's probably listening on the radio right now. And right now, if you're watching on video, you would see my pantomime of Nicole driving, wiggling her hips. Okay, let's introduce the folks that are here with us. Returning champion, Norman Blumenstadt. Hi, Norman.
Hello.
Welcome.
Champion of what?
Nobody knows.
Okay.
Catherine Williams, hi. Welcome
Hello.
To the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Returning co-champion is Nate Dunaway.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I am the champion of being on the show two times.
I am the champion
My
of offstage.
Yep.
We have Aaron Ulna Olson.
Hello.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes.
Yay. Good for me. And Luke Hill.
Hello, you pronounced that correctly as well.
I was going to ask you, and I didn't need to. Well, welcome to Offstage and On the Air, everybody. Yeah, it is Juneteenth, and that's a big day, and it's lots of celebrations. It's nice to be able to celebrate things happening for diverse people, for good things happening. We're so often are talking about negative things happening. So that's it. So we'll just jump right into things. We had an opening, which is kind of controversial, and we'll talk about this a little bit as well. Did anybody read the book, A Secret Life of Bees?
No.
I have not.
That's my imitation of a bee. Well, okay. So it's a book by, oh my gosh, and I did not, Sue Monk Kidd. It's in 2001. It's a novel. Tells a story about a young white girl that helps her older black woman sort of escape their terrible house. And they go and they live with, or they meet up with three African-American women whose names are June, August, and another month. They're 3 months.
September.
I don't think it's September.
I read that book.
Is it September?
I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll get we'll get there.
We can call her September.
Well, yeah, she's September. Anyway, they live, they're showing the life of these three African-American women that are filled with things that African-American women, this takes place in the 60s, early 60s, that they are college educated. They do things that, you know, one would typically associate with a white elite. And they are living together. Anyway, there's a musical that was Lynn Nottage trimmed the novel down. And was it Sam Gold was the director with just a wonderful group of people that were part of it. The music is by Duncan Sheik. Lyrics by Susan Birkenhead. Sam Gold was indeed the director. It's playing at the Atlantic Theater in New York right now. The Times gave it a terrible review. Oh. Jesse Green says The Secret Life of Bees is a musical lacking in sting. But The Times was all by itself in its negative review, really. Mm-hmm. Most everybody else liked it. It brings me to, well, let's, before we talk about some of the stuff underlying the negative reviews, I did, and I may go and change my critic of record. Sarah Holden at Vulture wrote a really wonderful review about it. And what I liked about her review, which is whenever I read a New York Times review, whether it's Ben Brantley or Jesse Green, I never know what the plot is after I read the review. Their writing is so esoteric. And I can't really figure, if you said, what's the show about? I couldn't tell you. But Sarah Holdren. I bet you Lynn Nottage could write a good review, too. Sarah Holdren did a really good job of, like, when I read this, I went, oh, I get what it's about. But she said, and I quote, this is a musical theater brings out all the effectiveness about Secret Life of Bees, which, was it Jesse Green or Ben Brantley? Jesse Green said, it was, you can't really make a musical out of this novel very well. As a matter of fact, he said that they really shouldn't. They shouldn't have a second draft. They should just let this one die.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was really sort of mean about it. She says, Sarah Holdren says, quote, it truly feels like a fruitful collaboration in whose various team members are all joyfully pulling their weight. It really sounds like a show I would like to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, me too.
It was a wonderful book.
Yeah, it was a wonderful book. I read about half of it. So good, I couldn't read the whole thing. one of the things, some of the criticism I've been hearing, and Jesse Green, and both Jesse Green and Ben Brantley get this, about being a little too white and privileged in their point of view. And I've been having conversations, and this I'll open it up to everybody here. I've been having, and of course, I'm looking around here, we're radio. Every single one of us is a white face. White, so white. This is we're probably part of the problem here. But I was talking to some of my friends of color. I'm talking specifically about when we just had the Critics Circle Awards that happen, and of course we get the Biden Payne Awards. But we have no critics here in Austin of color. Mm. So the perspective that we are getting when we read the paper are usually of a white upper middle class perspective, which then translates to you're not getting Critics Circle Awards because those voices are not part of the debate inside. And what I've been hearing on...
But that's actually a double-edged sword in the sense that an awful lot of our critics are stringers. They get paid per piece. So, you know, it depends on the person's writing ability, whether they can work that way. Like, I get paid, you know, every time I write, and in the meantime, I'm not paid at all.
Right. No, that's true. But if you take, I'm not taking that out of the equation at all.
Yeah.
But if you talk about people's experiences and it informs everything we do, that those voices are not being heard, and I think they should. And it's not just Austin. So that's just not a criticism of what we have here. It happens at the New York Times. And when we lost Charles Isherwood, everybody, I think, was really hoping for a different voice other than a white man. Mm. And guess what we got? Another white man. Mm. So I just find it interesting. And that's what the critics that I've been hearing, listening to on podcasts and things like that, talking about how evil this review is. And then Ben Brantley misgendering somebody in the... there was a non-binary production of something and several months back where he purposely and distastefully misgendered someone. And these critics are not coming from a point of view that really really comes from what our society looks like these days. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to do a better job of that.
Yeah. Well, the important thing about that, too, is that theater, or really anything, is experiential. So you go to it with one filter, because who you are, we all have filters. And part of what diversity brings to us is a different filter.
Mm-hmm. True.
And it gains and gives you a whole different experience and makes the whole thing much more enriching.
True. And we all win when that happens.
Yes. So, we all win.
So I challenge here in Austin and elsewhere that we try to widen the field, especially the critical field here in our theater. Mm-hmm. I think that that's necessary. I know a lot of people, performers of color, that feel that certain pieces that were out there this season were overlooked because those voices weren't out there. So I think that's something that we as white people need to forcefully put out there and try to further the conversation. That's it. Let me step down off of my soapbox. Tink, tink. All right. Who's heard of the Jimmy Awards here? We talk about it on this show a lot, and so all of you always listen to our show, so you know all about it, right? Y'all know the Jimmy Awards? Norman, do you know the Jimmy Awards?
How long do I have to answer this question?
In four words or less.
Forget it.
No.
Forget it.
Are you anti-Jimmy Award?
I can't remember what they are.
Okay. Jimmy Awards, they're for the Jimmy Niederlander is what they're named after. But our version of it here in Austin is the Greater High School Musical Theater Awards. And it's a high school award, and it's really pretty amazing. This is the 11th annual one. It's hosted by Ben Platt. I mention it now because it's happening this Sunday on June 24th. It is being live streamed on Facebook and on YouTube, so it's something we can watch. This is the farm team of where our next young, our next performers are going to come from. As a matter of fact, the winners of the Jimmys have gone on to starring roles in Broadway shows in the latest season. So a couple things I want to
mention. But that's what that PBS special was about.
The
high school students who come to New York for a week, and they work on things and then do a performance on a Monday night.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the documentary that Norman is talking about. Was a PBS documentary about the Jimmy Awards, and it's an amazing piece, and it's really good to look at. If I can find it, I'll put a link to it on our show notes. But they are announcing their Inspiring Teacher Awards, and I just want to let you know who those are. That's Matthew Henson from the Northwest School of the Arts in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Tasha Partee from the Lawrence Woodmere Academy in Woodmere, New York. Representing Texas, oddly enough, and I've talked to Ginger Morris about this before, I don't think Austin qualifies because of the way the awards are situated to bring our students up there, but we are what's the word I'm trying to come up with? There are people from Texas in it, and that is Kobe Rogers and Haley Dortch from Dallas Summer Musicals High School in Dallas, Adam Krall and Mireya Velasquez, the Tommy Tune Awards in Houston, Texas, and finally San Antonio, our neighbor to the south, Jackson Hager and Katie Bolson, Las Casas Foundation's Josie Awards in San Antonio. So this Sunday, streaming live. I'm going to watch them. Maybe. Maybe not.
Sunday.
Sorry, funny car blowout blitz. Also, that we're in Pride Month. Lots of things happening. And the Pride Plays is happening this weekend. And this is the inaugural year for the Pride Plays. It is it's produced by Michael Urey and Doug Nevin. And the festival director is ex-offstage and on-the-air co-host and Mr. Nick Mayo. It is a play of readings that Rattlestick Playwrights Theater in New York is doing. Yours truly is part of their advisory board, and they're doing a lot of really great things with a lot of really great names. And it opens tomorrow, the 20th, and plays through the weekend. Some of the highlights that I just want to point out is they're doing an all trans version of Our Town. So it's making the characters trans. These are an opportunity for trans non-binary actors to play these roles that they never would be offered. So that's happening on 8 p.m. on Thursday, the 20th.
It's marvelous. marvelous.
It is. It's pretty amazing. As a matter of fact, when I spoke to them, they were asking me whether that I thought that was a good idea, and I went, good idea. Are you crazy? Do it. The only thing that would make it better is if I was in it. And they didn't. They didn't take that bait. But there is a link to the site so you can see the full lineup. The finale has a whole group of people performing in the finale. The last piece, which is called "Some Men" by somebody named Terrence McAnally. People like T.R. Knight and Tony Award winner this year of, oh my God, I just lost his name. There's his picture. I'm going to come up with it. But anyway, he's in it. And Nick Mayo is also in it. Why did I just lose his name? This is terrible. Anyway, him. I'm looking for, there's just a list of names and he's in here. Anyway, but that's good. Pride Plays. Check it out. I could go to New York to see it because my plans have changed this weekend, which we will discuss in just a little while. So let's talk, just very quickly, keeping with New York for just a second more, let's check the time. Hillary and Clinton is closing early. So three of the straight plays that Scott Rudin produced, King Lear with
Glenda Jackson.
Oh my God, thank God you're here, Norman Blumenstein. Gary, the sequel to Titus Andronicus, and Hillary and Clinton are both, all three closed.
But wasn't Gary a limited run?
They're all limited runs, but they all closed about
earlier than their end date.
All of them. All three of them are closing earlier than their end date. So that's unfortunate. And specifically Titus Andronicus or Gary, I really wanted to see that.
Me too.
So let's talk regional theater for just a little moment. Norman, have you heard of Serenity Playhouse?
No.
Yeah, neither had I. It's in Georgia, and it's at all, every show that they do is site-specific. They've been 10 years, and I'm going to ask Rebecca to hand me my computer right there.
Is it sort of like what Cornerstone was, Cornerstone Theater, when they would go into towns and do those productions where they would use some of their members, and they would cast the rest of it locally, and they would come in and like do Romeo and Juliet. No.
It's all done in their part of the world and near Atlanta, Georgia. And so it looks really fascinating. So the show that they're doing right now is hold on, stand by. I'm doing. They're doing Pocahontas right now, and they're closing their 10th year season with Hair. And these are all done outside. And one of the things I want to point out, when you go to their site, they have this FAQ, 10 things to know, and I just want to share those with you. Number one, all of our shows are outdoors. Number two, we perform Rain or Shine. So they're performing Rain or Shine, and if you dig into this a little bit further, they say that if... They form Rain or Shine, but the safety of the actors and the audience is their utmost. So if an hour and a half before the show, they will decide to bring it indoors. And you can buy rain insurance so that if it rains and they have to either move indoors or they can't, or you don't, you can go to another day. But they say if you don't have rain insurance, you're screwed.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So it says, all of our shows are site-specific. Just reference the address in your pre-show email and follow the green firefly signs to parking. All of our shows are general admission. Some of our shows ask for you to walk within the site. They're great places to eat. We sell yummy concessions. I just love what they did. And I have a little listing of their 10 seasons and some of the things that they had. So their very first season 10 years ago, they did Shakespeare's R&J. Very cryptic. What does R&J stand for? The Jungle Book and John and Jen. They did Hair on their fourth season, and they're reprising it now to close out their third season. And you can go to their site, and they have, I'm showing this to our studio audience here, and now I'll show it to you in the radio. I like their posters. There's not a lot of words on them, so that's sort of fun. But they've done The Secret Garden, Streetcar Named Desire. It appears that they do The Snow Queen every year. That seems to be a... So it sounds like a fascinating regional theater without a home. I find it interesting that their name is Serenity Playhouse when they don't have a playhouse.
That's deeply ironic, Lisa.
It is. Yes, Norman.
So have you ever done outdoor Shakespeare or an outdoor drama?
I did. I did an outdoor drama. I did The Lone Star in 1977.
Uh-huh.
Have you?
In Polydor. Yeah. Well, so I grew up in El Paso, and there's a canyon within the city of El Paso, uh-huh, in the Franklin Mountains, McKelligan Canyon. So they created this thing, El Paso del Norte. You know, the whole thing about the founding of El Paso. You know, and an awful lot of those outdoor dramas, you know, they're basically pageants with music and dance.
They are indeed. Was it a Paul Green?
Some of the worst written plays in the world.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, yeah.
Tecumseh is probably the longest running one. It's still playing, I think. And the Lone Star, the one I did, was I loved. So then you know the term rain pace. Have you learned that term?
Well, the one that I worked in, I mean, the ticket said, if it rained and we had to stop the show, you had seen the show, you weren't, and there was no refunds. But it amazed me. The second act started with a rain dance, which was very effective. Over the course of the summer, the rain dance would happen, it would pour rain, and the show was over.
It's funny. So we had a thing called rain pace, because in our show, they had to refund tickets if it rained before the second act. So if it was threatening rain, they would tell us actors rain pace, and we'd step up the pace to try to get through act one so that they wouldn't have to refund the money. It's terrible.
So did you have animals in your outfit?
We did. We had horses.
Yes. We had horses and a donkey and scorpions and rattlesnakes.
Well, oh my gosh. We had an alligator. The alligator was not in the show. He was in the lake that was part of the show.
Well, the scorpions and the rattlesnakes were not in the
show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
So, yeah.
The alligator was just there for moral support.
Well, right? We all wore IZOD shirts at the time.
Okay.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, only Norman gets that.
Oh. I get it. The logo.
I get it.
Okay. We're running out of time. I want to make sure we get to some of this other stuff. Also in the regions, the Huntington Theater Company in Boston, Billy Porter is going to direct a show called The Purists. Billy Porter, people may know or may not know from
Kinky Boots,
yes. But he's also an accomplished director that I did not know. He's the original director of Top Dog Underdog, amongst other things. So he's going to be doing this show called The Purist. I'm going to read you the little blurb about it. A former rapper, a DJ, and a show tunes loving telesales director have become an unlikely group who hang out and spar about music on a stoop in Queens. But when an impromptu rap battle erupts between the two younger female MCs, everything gets questioned. With raw emotion and uproarious humor, The Purist asks, what is friendship? How can we embrace new ideas? And what does it mean to be wholly yourself? That little sound effect that nobody else heard because you don't have headphones on was just perfectly timed. I'm going to help you, Rebecca, in just a second. So we show how the sausage is made here on this. So other things that Billy Porter has done is George C. Wolfe's play, The Colored Museum. Susan Laurie Park's Top Dog Underdog, which I just said. And he did those both at the Huntington Theater Company in Boston. Are you familiar with the Huntington Theater Company?
Yes. I mean, what do you mean by how familiar? I mean, I'm familiar because, you know, because it's one of these things that you hear about all the time. And, you know,
yeah.
And that's sort of interesting because I would think, I mean, the people that I've heard about would make it very white. You know, people like Kate Burton doing British plays at the
right.
Huntington Theater Company. Yeah.
So. I did a show at the Huntington Theater Company about 10 years ago.
You did,
ago.
In Boston.
I did.
Are you from that area of the world?
I went to college in Boston, but I was a working professional costume designer in New York City for a number of years.
I've heard of New York City. No, I really have.
And I designed...
Oh, that's funny. I've heard of it.
I designed Les Liaisons Dangereuses for the Huntington in 2006.
Awesome.
It was a wonderful theater to work for.
So tell us about the theater itself. Tell us about the physical space. What's the
physical space is it's a proscenium theater. I don't remember how many
is
seats
there were.
Is it like
an
were.
Old downtown theater?
It is. Yes, yeah. It's in an old building downtown.
Yeah.
And Yes, it was a wonderful place to work.
Awesome. Well, yeah, it looks like a great show, Huntington. The last thing I want to do about and we're run out of everything to talk about, but this is a Queens Theater in Queens. I was immediately taken by the headline, which is they have a press release that they are instituting Theater for All. And that's one of the things that I talk about a lot in my theaters, Theater for All. But their take is a little bit more inclusive than where I was going. But I just wanted to, I'm looking for the little piece of paper that says I actually had, anyway, I can't find it. But what they're saying is, you know, we want to have accessible theater for everybody. Mm-hmm. We do all these shows and we have, and Ali Stroker talked about this on the Tonys, that we spend a lot of time making our house and audience areas fully accessible for people with physical disabilities, deaf folks, blind folks. We do all that, but we don't do that for our stage. So we it's harder for us to have a disabled actor because our backstage is not accessible. Yeah. So they were talking about making everything accessible and really working on their theater in Queens, both front and back of house, to be accessible to all, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yep. The last thing I want to talk about very quickly, because we're running late, and I have to talk about this because I'm an ex-stage manager, and I was actually one of the original members of this group, although I let it go years and years ago. But the Stage Managers Association in New York is having their annual Del Hughes Lifetime Achievement Awards, and I just want to mention the names of the people that are winning these awards because I think they bear mentioning, because we so often don't, and a stage manager that's doing their job correctly is invisible. So the best ones you don't see. So they are Rich Constable, Barbara Donner, and Mary Klinger. They are all winning the Del Close Award. And then Janet Friedman, who is a personal friend of mine, is winning the Founders Award, as she's been with SMA since the very, very beginning. So I will also take credit, because if I had continued my membership, I would have also been with them. But I didn't. So that's great. So we're going to take a little break, and we are going to hear another African-American musical, Shuffle Along. So this is the original Shuffle Along from, I believe, 1920. You might know.
Yeah, I would say.
But we all, of course, we had the Shuffle
will
Along.
Will Audra McDonald be singing?
No, she will not. So this is actually UB Blake and I think somebody else. Anyway, this is Shuffle Along.
Everyone in town is always singing the song. Shuffle
We along. Are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps and Rebecca Malonson.
Here, here.
Here, here. I don't know. I was going to sing a song, but I couldn't figure out one to sing.
That didn't work out very well.
We've been having great conversations with Luke Hill, Aaron Olson. That's hard to say in one fell swoop. Nate Dunaway, Catherine Williams, and Norman Blumenstadt. Now we're going to switch and speak specifically to Norman, Catherine, and Nate. So we're going to talk about A Doll's House, which I am embarrassed to say I've never seen.
No way.
I know.
Lisa, how could you?
A lot of people have never seen it.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. It's so to be clear, this is Henrik Ibsen, and this one has been adapted by Frank McGinnis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or as I like to call him, Frank McGinnis.
Yes.
That was good.
That was good. This is why I'm not on stage.
Don't sell yourself short.
So Norman, A Doll's House, this is the most produced play in the country, is it not?
In the world.
Or the world.
In the world.
Yeah, but it's also in the country then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I was not incorrect.
yeah, but I mean, but the Ibsen, not the Lucas Hoth.
Correct.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And you're thinking of A Dollhouse Part 2.
2, yeah.
Yes, which is also, it's getting up there in terms of like this year or last year. So tell us about A Doll's House.
Well, A Doll's House is about it's about a marriage. It's about money. It's about family. It's about husband and wife who live in a society where they totally buy the roles that society has given them to play, and then they realize that the roles are maybe they're not right for the roles, and maybe they need to find out who they are, and maybe this marriage was a mistake to begin with. So, you know, there's And, it's based on a real incident of a woman that Ibsen knew who as Nora does in this play, she borrowed money because her husband had tuberculosis to save mm-hmm. him. And when it came time to pay the debt, she couldn't pay the debt. And eventually the husband found out, and the husband was completely paranoid about being in debt, unlike the U.S. at the moment, and had the wife committed.
Oh my!
Had the wife committed and the children taken away from her because mm-hmm. she was an unfit mother. Eventually, that woman begged the husband to let her come back. But that was sort of what prompted Ibsen to write this, because he knew this woman.
Awesome. That sounds fascinating. And she ends up, well, I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but I think we know what happens at the end of the
date. Has passed.
So she leaves at the end.
She does.
Yes, because so that she can be her own person.
Because she doesn't know who she is at all, because she's been raised in this society and in this house where everything was kind of pushed on her. And so at the end, she kind of realizes, I don't know anything about myself.
Right.
I've only been told what you guys have told me, and now I have to go figure out what's going on with me and what's going on with society and what's right and what's morally correct, because she doesn't know.
Which in today's date we might say, oh, I get that. But at the time, that just did not happen.
Yeah.
We were all, our roles were pretty clear cut. Mm-hmm. I need to take a quick moment and take a quick side trip. Catherine, could you please give me a number between 2 and 54?
45.
45, okay.
Nice, decisive.
Perfect, right away. Let's see what 45 is.
Oh, I'm excited. We'll see.
Hello, I'm Leroy Reams, and you are listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM.
Hello.
Oh, yes, I know that Kara would love to be here. She, you know, I closed my last tour of Hello, Dolly in Austin when my dear Lady Bird was alive, and you know.
Okay, we're gonna fade that out.
This what happens that?
This is our legal ID, and we have rotation of famous-y people. Norman Blumenthal has a great one, so that one I need to take out of rotation because I explained this. This happened exactly last week, I believe. It was Leroy Reams, Lillian Montevecchi, and Kate Ballard, and I recorded them individually, but my sound program, I accidentally exported them coming out. And I said, hey, that sounds pretty good. So anyway, so that's going to come out of the rotation. I've got to remember to do that.
It kind of sounded like people speaking in tongues or
it
something.
It was.
Oh, my.
It was. So you guys are prepared to do a little scene, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Somebody
want to
set that up for us?
Well, this is at the very beginning of the play. This is at the very beginning of the play, which gets to one of the core issues of the play, which I think happens in every relationship, money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is Catherine Williams and Nate Dunaway doing a scene from Different Stages production of A Doll's House by Henrik Ibsen.
When did Squirrel scamper home?
Just now. Torvald, come and see what I've bought.
I can't be disturbed. Did you say bought? All of this. I've a little bird who likes to fritter money. Has that little bird been frittering again?
But darling, we can spend a little more, can't we?
You know very well we can't spend a fortune.
I didn't say that, did I? I just said a little bit. Anyway, you're going to get a big salary and you will earn pots and pots of money.
After New Year, yes, but it will be a full 3 months before the salary is due.
So what? We can borrow till then.
Nora, are you being a silly girl? Say I borrowed 1,000 and you let it slip through your fingers during Christmas, and then a tile falls off the roof, hits me on the head, and flattens me.
Don't say such horrible things.
What if something horrible happened, Nora?
If something that horrible did happen, I wouldn't care if we had debts or not.
The people I've borrowed from would care.
Them? They're strangers. Who cares about strangers?
Now, be serious, Nora. You know what I think. Look, the two of us have managed well enough up to now. We still have to manage for a short while, and we will, because we must. Who's hanging her head? Is it my little Skylark? She mustn't. Nora, look, what have I here?
Money!
Yes, I know how much money needs to be spent in a house at Christmas.
10, 20, 30, 40. Tovel, thank you. I will stretch it out, I promise.
Okay, and we have Tovolt Mansplaining from 1873.
From the get-go.
The original mansplainer.
Now we know where it comes from. That what? How wonderful.
Thank you, Lisa.
So, you're welcome. How is it? So, obviously, we didn't say this before, but Catherine, you're playing Nora.
Yes,
ma'am. And you're playing you're playing Luke.
Luke. Luke Skywalker.
You're playing Luke.
Yes.
I'm terrible at that. You're playing Torvald?
Torvald, yes.
I think that's the name. That was the name of my pet mice back in the day.
Catherine's
looking at me like, what? I'm totally making that up.
Torvald.
It was my sorority name in college, though.
That's a good name.
Tell us about these characters.
So Nora kind of starts out the beginning of the play. She's happy in she thinks she's happy in her role and her place in her home. She makes the house just the way Torvald likes it, and what's really bringing her happiness is her secret about her loan that she's that she's gotten away with it. She saved her husband's life, and she's just very, very proud of this. And
that she's worked some in the evening, and she says, like a man,
yes,
and I earned money for it.
So she gets this kind of pride from doing this that's totally unheard of in her time and as being a woman. And so, but then that kind of changes as she is starting to get blackmailed from the person that loaned her the money, and things kind of go downhill from there. And she just expects that whenever all this comes out, because now she knows it's going to be exposed, and
right,
that Torvald will take the blame. He'll pay off the loan, and then she's gonna end her life so that he won't have to.
She's gonna end her life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, so that he won't have to live with the shame of it all, basically, And so with that realization in mind, that's what she thinks is going to happen. And then at the end, it kind of is exposed that he's not going to take the blame. He's not concerned about what's happening with her. He doesn't care that she's thinking about killing herself. He thinks this is all pretty ridiculous, and that she's going to now be confined to the home. She's not going to be able to raise the children. And they're only going to continue being married for the appearance of things. And so when that hits her, she realizes everything that she has ever thought and everything she has ever put out was a lie. And so that's when she has this revelation of, oh my God, who am I? Who am I married to? What did I do for this man who doesn't even...
So that really shows a three-dimensional character in a world that really put women in two dimensions.
Exactly.
And so do we also have three dimensions for Torvald?
Yeah, I think Torvald is really interesting guy. You know, he's kind of your quintessential, secure kind of head of the household. You know, that he's just received this new position at the bank. They're going to start receiving all this money. Things are just looking up for them. You know, he has three healthy children, and you start to see this facade kind of crack, you know, and he loves Nora. Him and Nora genuinely love each other, but they don't know each other. Mm-hmm. And you start to find that out, and all the kind of pet names and the way he treats her, it kind of, you figure out that that's not only, you know, pet names. It's kind of his conception of hers as as this kind of thing that he, that is precious to him, but he doesn't understand and he doesn't really give, you know, credence to.
It's interesting in the script. We've talked about how many times Torvald says, I.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and that's
which is indicative of that of the era and of the objectification of our property, which were our wives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's kind of constrained by his society, just like Nora. He's not allowed to know her like that. You know, mm-hmm. That's not how things work.
Or himself.
Yeah, or himself. Right. Or himself. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So when does this show open?
Friday.
Woo-hoo!
Friday, that's the 21st?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and where is it playing?
At Trinity Street Playhouse.
Okay, which I think is a lovely theater.
Oh, it's a beautiful space.
I love
the theater. It's very interesting. It's an interesting space.
I will say this to folks that are listening. Some people get a little put off because it's downtown. They think parking is going to be an issue, but it's not. I've never had an issue parking there, so don't let that throw you off of going there. Where can folks go to get more information?
To the Different Stages website.
Which is differentstages.org.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you,
Lisa.
We really appreciate it. So that was Norman Blumenthal, Catherine Williams, and Nate Dunaway of Different Stages, production of A Dollhouse by Henrik Ibsen, adopted by Frank McGinnis. It not adopted, by the way. It would be adapted by Brett McGinnis. Could have adopted it, I'm not sure. Plays June 21st through July 13th at Trinity Theater. For more information, differentstagestheater.org. This is something that Nora could never say.
I will never leave.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Rebecca Melanson and a whole bunch of other people.
Bunch of fun people.
You didn't. I said your name and you didn't say anything.
I'm so sorry.
So we're going to very quickly look at our, what am I trying to say? Our local stuff. First thing I need to say to tell people in the listening audience is that Black Do Crack, that was scheduled to open on Thursday, it's a reprise of Black Do Crack by Florinda Bryant. Due to health and family issues, we're unable to do the show. So Black Do Crack is being canceled at Ground Floor Theater. So anybody that has purchased tickets will get a refund. And we look for something to happen next weekend at the theater. We don't know what it is yet. This just happened today. So once again, Black Do Crack at Ground Floor Theater has been canceled. But what hasn't been canceled at the Ground Floor Theater as well is the Rude Mechs. If you know their Fixing Shakespeare series, they are fixing The Last Henry, which is Henry what? Anybody know The Last Henry in Shakespeare's canon? Anybody?
War?
Okay, so Luke just did hand signals, which doesn't work on the radio. What was that hand signal that you did, Luke?
I was wild guessing 8.
You would be correct. So it's Henry the 8th. So Fixing Henry, you can find information on their website, Rude Mechs. But best, and the way I found it easier, was to look at their Facebook page. So they have an event on that. Finally, I want to talk about Paper Chairs. They are doing the Divine Narcissus at Rogie. The Rogie Place. I forgot it. This is a Paper Chairs thing. It's been adapted by Elizabeth Doss, and it has Vincent Tomasino, Alexandra Bassikouse-Shaw, Cassandra Revelis, Paige Touts, Kate Taylor, and Travis Tate. Directed. Who directed? Oh, it's co-directed by Elizabeth Doss and Lisa Lerada. That's only 8 performances at the Rogie Ranch House. Paperchairs.com to get more information. And finally, it's time for
Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
I can channel Nicole.
You're good. You are channeling her. She's now driving more like this. And she's going. So let's do Today in Theater History and see what's been going on. This is not the right piece of paper I'm looking at. Here it is. So we're going to start in 1965. I think this is kind of interesting. So the production of Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand, an actor named Sidney Chaplin leaves the production because the rumor was that he had some friction between himself and the co-star Barbara and his co-star Barbara Streisand. The official reason for the early departure was that he had disagreements with the producer, but I'm betting it's the first. Okay, crickets. All right,
nobody really cares about that.
I'll agree with you.
In 1966, I did not realize he died this late. It's the death of Ed Wynn. I think a lot of people will recognize him. He did I Love to Laugh in the Mary Poppins movie. And he started out on a career on vaudeville. And he passed away in 1966, shortly after Mary Poppins. He was also in, and I don't remember, the Diary of Anne Frank. Who listeners to this show know that is she was my aunt. But that's another story altogether. 1978, Best Little Whore House in Texas opened on Broadway, and starring Carlin Glenns. And Henderson Forsythe won a Tony for it. And it was directed by Tommy Tune. Tommy Tune and Peter Masterson, I guess. But Tommy Tune, Texas boy. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you. This is an immersive radio
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Thank you. This is also in 2013. I don't remember this show. It's a Tennessee Williams show. It's rarely seen. And it is called The Two Character Plays. Anybody heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Guess how many characters are in it.
I'm going to take another wild number guess and say 2.
Oh, you're right. It starred Amanda Plummer and Brad Dourif. And they were two actors who find themselves on tour... who are on tour and find themselves deserted by their troupe.
And I believe Brad Dourif is also the actor who played Chucky in the Child's Play movies.
Oh, I did not know that. What's the, is that the
killer doll?
The killer doll? Uh-huh. Okay, uh-huh. Interesting. That's a good one. This is also 2014. Holler If You Hear Me opened up. This is the play inspired by Tupac Shakur's music. It was directed by Kenny Leon. It didn't do really good. I was on my way to New York to see it. Were you living in New York when this was playing?
What year was that?
2014.
No.
Yeah. I was on my way. I really wanted to see it, but I missed it. So that was 2014. Birthdays, Mo Howard. And I meant to take some time to look up Mo Howard to see what Broadway stuff he's done. Does everybody know who Mo Howard was? I bet, yeah. The boys in the room know. He was Three Stooges. He's the Mo of the Three Stooges.
Oh.
And also the birthday of Luis Jordan, Nancy Marchand, Gina Rowlands, Maria Tucci, Felicia Rashad, Kathleen Turner, and me. No, I'm kidding. No, it's not mine.
It's like, wow. All right.
So we're going to take another little break, and let's see what we're going to listen to. It's keeping with the theme of Juneteenth, but also we always play something from Today in Theater History. This is from Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
And then it's 24 hours.
We are BAC back. I need to write that as a song. You're listening. You are continuing to listen to Offstage Gen on the Air with Lisa and Rebecca.
Hello. Rebecca's here. I'm
no
official.
Nicole. Sure, no, Nicole. Official. You're an official.
I'm channeling
person.
Nicole, though.
You are. You're not talking nearly enough to channel Nicole. So our final guest, saving the best for last, is Reverie Theater Company. Outside Mullingar by John Patrick Shanley. We have Aaron Una Olsen, which is now fun to say.
Good.
I'm just saying. I'm just going to get Aaron Una Olsen and Luke Hill.
Hello, hello.
So, Outside Mullingar. That's, it won.
It was nominated for the 2014 Tony for Best Play.
Yeah. The same year that Holler If You Can Hear Me was playing.
That's right. That's correct.
So tell us about this show, Outside Mullingar.
Oh, boy. You know, this is one of those shows that it's tricky to say too much about without giving
part
of the
plot
away. But it's a story about two neighboring Irish farmers who've live on their family's farm and have, you know, that they've had for generations, and sort of a missed connection, unrequited love sort of story.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show. So four character play.
Four character play.
Taking play. Are we doing our Irish accents?
We are. Indeed.
Okay. Lovely.
Indeed. I've had my lucky charms this morning and everything. Yeah.
So if you want me to do a cameo, I'm really good in an Irish accent, as you heard earlier.
Oh, you have
now
to show
you tell
us
then.
Now
you tell us.
I have. Remind me when we're off the air or we're backstage. I can tell you my Irish. School person joke. It's really lovely. So Outside Mullingar, is it a comedy?
You know, it certainly has a lot of laughs. Ultimately, I would say it's a drama.
Okay.
But yeah, it definitely has a lot of laughs. It's a love story, ultimately.
Yeah, and you guys got a lovely review in Broadway World.
We did.
We're
yeah, very,
very, very, very
that.
Complimentary. Like super complimentary.
Yes.
So that's great.
Yeah.
We are very pleased.
Yeah. So have the audiences enjoyed it as much as this critic?
They have. We've gotten very good responses from the audience, which it makes us so happy because it really is such a beautiful play and we couldn't wait to share it with Austin audiences and we couldn't believe that it has never been produced here before. It's the Austin premiere.
Yes.
And
that's
honestly,
nice.
The director that we worked with had some a really great vision for how to put this thing up. And yeah,
and that director's name is Michael Cooper?
Michael Cooper.
Yes.
He's a visiting director. He still lives primarily in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been coming down to work with us on a few things. And he's done some just absolutely beautiful stuff with the play.
Well, great. Now, y'all are prepared to do a little scene, too, aren't you?
We are prepared.
Okay. Will you set that up for us?
Yeah, do you want to set
sure.
it up?
Sure. Okay, so this actually happens in the second act after intermission, and it takes place in my character's farmhouse. he's come over and is visiting with me. And I don't want to give too much away.
I don't feel like I should just, we haven't seen each other for years, and we're finally sitting down to have a conversation. And I have more of an agenda than I might have let on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is Aaron Una Olsen and Luke Hill doing a scene from Reverie Theatre Company's production of Outside Mullingar.
Rosemary, I have news.
I knew it.
It did not.
I knew there must be something to get you within sight of the house.
And it's true. My cousin is coming from America.
Who?
Frank's son, Adam Riley.
Ugh, Adam. Imagine naming your child after the first man on Earth.
I suppose they did. He's going to want to be brought round.
They must have had the Bible open to the first page.
I suppose so.
Brought round? What do you mean, brought round?
He's going to want to meet people.
Which?
Well, you'd be good.
Me?
Why not?
Why?
If you want to know the utter truth, I believe Adam is coming from America in search of a wife.
Ah, a wife.
He believes an Irish woman would be made of better stuff than these girls he meets in America.
There's truth in that. And you want me to help him find somebody?
Well, you could do that, I suppose.
What about Mary O'Connor?
Mary O'Connor? Or does she still have that whistling tooth?
She does.
And ankles like shackles spilling out of her shoes.
Hard worker, though. She can rip an aluminum can with her hands.
Oh, God love her. And I was thinking more somebody like you.
Ugh, me what? Who's like me?
Well, you are. I was thinking you might let him take a look at you.
Take a look at me in what way?
Your beauty.
My beauty?
Yes.
This is the first I've heard of it.
Well, don't pretend you don't know you're beautiful. A half of Mullingar's been to your door.
Tony Riley, you've lived a rock's throw since the day of me birth, and this is the first I've heard about beauty.
Are you going to denounce me for bringing it up?
And you want to what? To put me in the shop window like one of those Euro floozies from Amsterdam?
What the hell are you talking about, Amsterdam?
Amsterdam, you know what I'm talking about. Naked women on parade in the windows of Amsterdam.
We're talking about my cousin. He's a solid man. He's never even been to Amsterdam, I don't think.
But you'd bring him here to look me over like I was a red heifer.
Jesus, I see what you mean about the smoking and giving it up, Rosemary. You're not yourself.
How would you know?
Your temper is rough.
Did he offer you money?
Who?
Your cousin.
For what?
Why would you go out of your way like this? You know what it is. There's a name for it. It's human trafficking.
Human trafficking? It is not.
Oh, you heard me. It's all over the news.
He's my cousin. He's a fine lad. And he's lonely.
Oh, my God. What a great thing. I wish we had our webcam up because these two actors had their eyes locked on each other the entire time. It was pretty amazing to watch. What a great scene.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Aaron, you've got some wonderful lines.
Oh, yes.
Around Amsterdam floozy, which was indeed my sorority name in college. So tell us very quickly. We don't have a whole bunch of time left. Tell us about these characters.
Well, we are both a bit of an out. We are both sort of outcasts. I've lived on my farm, on the family farm, my whole life. I've been in love with him my whole life, but have never said so. As you can tell from the piece, I'm a fiery, opinionated, rough person.
You are indeed.
Yes, which makes it just a joy to play on stage.
And I'm the exact opposite. Also grown up on my family's farm, just me and my father now. And I have a bit of a secret that no one knows about but my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, the whole play kind of circles around that.
Awesome. And the only way to find out is to go to the Master George Theater and figure it out, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. So when do you guys open?
We opened last weekend.
Oh, that's what I meant. When did y'all open?
I knew that's what you meant. Yeah, so we run for 2 more weeks.
Right.
Possibly 3.
That's right. That's
so you might extend.
We may extend.
So currently you're at the 30th, so you might go through July.
Through July 6th.
6th. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you for doing the math for me. And so you have two co-stars along with you, which is Tom Swift and Laurie Coker.
Correct.
Both absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. They are.
So I'm guessing Tom Swift plays the American.
No, they're all Irish. No. He plays my Irish father.
Is Tom putting on an Irish accent?
Oh, yes. Okay. He has a wonderful Irish accent.
I'm definitely going to see it. Because I got to see that.
He's wonderful. He's just heartbreaking in his role.
Wonderful. Well, he's a wonderful person. They both are.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. So where can folks go to get more information?
So they can go to, if they so choose, reverietheater.org.
Right. And very quickly, and we'll talk about this backstage a little bit. Reverie Theater is a new theater company.
Brand new. We, Aaron and I, put it together just to produce this play.
Just to produce this play. Mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. Well, we're glad you did. And tell folks about the Master George Theater. Where is it?
Yes, it's off of Pedernales and Cesar Chavez. Uh-huh. It's also the location of the Carol Hickey Acting Studio, which is where we both work.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you guys for being
Thanks
on the show.
For having
thank you
us.
So much.
And we'll see you backstage.
Great.
Great. That was Reverie Theater Company's Aaron Una Olsen and Luke Hill and their show, Outside Mullingar by John Patrick Shanley. Plays through June 30th, maybe July 6th at the Master George Theater. For more information, reverietheater.org, and we will be right back.
On the farm, far away from any harm. Country butter, eggs by the dozens, getting grabbed by all my cousins.
All right, we just got a little quickie on that, on the farm, which that was... Gwen Verdon from New Girl in Town. I just thought that was good. So we hit with the with the farm piece. So that was it. Rebecca Melanzone, congratulations once again for being a new certified programmer. That's great
thank
news.
You. Thank you. Thank you for all of your great teaching.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the student, not the teacher, I guarantee you. but remember, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. You can get us the podcast, which you should be getting, so you can hear things backstage at Offstage where we learn a little bit more about our guests. And that will be happening if you're listening on the podcast right now. You can get that by going to offstageonair.com and signing up for it. Next on the terrestrial radio is Austin Monitor News. So stick around, or not stick around. Yeah, stick around. But we'll be back next week. Here's Bring In the Noise, Bring In the Funk. Curtain has just come down on I've Got a Terrible Irish Accent, the musical. The story of a hapless young woman that can't get a job working in Ireland because she's got a terrible Irish accent. Anyway, the show is over. We've left the backstage. We're standing outside by the dumpsters. And we're just sitting here chatting with each other. And joining us here backstage is... Aaron Una Olsen, my new favorite name to say.
Hello.
Luke Hill.
Hello.
And Catherine Williams.
Hi.
Since we're backstage, can we switch to Kate?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Katie.
Katie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was
going to go with Kate.
Oh, my gosh. There's Kate. There's Kat. There's Katie. There's all Catherine. Right. So let's
or whatever. How about...
I can be Kate if you like.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah, let's all choose derivatives of Catherine.
That's perfect. But yeah, Katie is good.
Okay. Well, yeah, so we're a little less formal here. We're going to learn a little bit about, you know, who we are and where we came from and stuff. And so, Aaron, I want to start with you because you lived in New York. Has anybody else lived in New York?
Mm-mm.
I did briefly.
You did? Briefly? Uh-huh. Define briefly.
About 8 months.
8 months. Okay. Yeah. Am I detecting a little bit of an accent with you, Luke?
What kind of accent?
I don't know.
It's the Irish accent hanging on.
It might be.
It might be.
Is it the Irish accent hanging on?
It is possible. I'm not
it's
sure.
The Irish.
Okay. All right. In college, I took a dialects class as we all had to do.
Yeah.
And I still remember that my Scottish monologue, which is very, very good. I would do that for you, but I'm not going to. So I'm not hearing an accent. That's just a leftover. That's a hangover.
Yeah, probably.
Where did you come from?
I'm from Austin.
Texas?
Oh, mm-hmm.
Okay, I've heard of that place.
Yeah, it's a great place.
You're from Austin. What high school did you go to?
I went to Travis High School.
Travis High School in my neighborhood.
Oh, yeah?
Isn't Travis on Oldtorf?
Oldtorf and 35.
Yeah, it's where I live. Well, are you still in the neighborhood?
I am. Yeah,
oh, good.
Still in South Austin.
Awesome. Did you do theater in high school?
I did, indeed.
Did you do theater before high school?
I did.
Did you do theater before Middle. When did you start doing theater?
I started doing theater in middle school. Well, middle no, school. That's not true. Okay. I guess elementary school.
Actually. And one would ask why. What got you there?
I started making films when I was about 5 years old. My mm-hmm. dad gave me an 8mm camera, and I would act in my own little things and make him shoot me, and I just fell in love with doing it. So as mm-hmm. soon as I saw that as an opportunity in my school, I went for it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so did you go to college?
I did briefly.
Donde?
At ACC, actually.
At ACC, uh-huh. Okay. Yep. So you've not strown far from whatever. You haven't left. You haven't. Have you lived elsewhere other than?
I have. I've left.
You were
a
in
few
New York
times.
For.
Yeah, and then mm-hmm. come back. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've left a few times for various
film?
Reasons. I do, and I was a touring musician for a number of years as well. So I toured internationally.
TM, we call those.
He what toured with Bob Dylan.
Did you tour with Bob Dylan?
Maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner, you know.
He is indeed.
When what instrument did you play?
I play guitar and I sing.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So were you up there right with him?
We were his opening act. We spent a month with him doing minor league ballpark stadiums.
Oh, well, that's cool. What's the name? What was the name of the group? And does it still exist?
It does not still uh-huh. exist. It was called Ilana James and the Continental Two.
Okay, so now were you with Bob Dylan when he was his religious Bob Dylan?
No. We were lucky enough to be with Bob on the tour where he had his first number one album in 30 years.
Wait a second. Oh, you were not old enough to be... Oh, in 30 years.
In
okay,
30
sorry.
Years.
I,
no,
I finished.
Not
I was
ever.
About to say, okay. Yeah. So this was... After his religious thing that he went through.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Hallelujah.
Mazel tov, as my people say. Well, that's awesome. So do you still do music?
I do. I have a couple of bands here in town. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have a rubber band.
I don't
band.
Do it as much. Oh, you do?
I do.
Tell me more.
I do.
Impressive.
I can't. It's classified. I'd have to tell you. So what kind of music?
I primarily play 30s swing jazz music. A huge fan of Django Reinhardt. It was kind of the guy who inspired me.
Lovely. That's cool. Who else? Anybody else a musician?
I was a classical oboist.
Oh, wow.
A long time.
Double reed players are crazy, says my friend Marianne.
That's what my high school teacher, band teacher told me once.
Crazy.
Aaron, you have to be careful. Oboists are crazy.
They're
kind
all
of
double
weird.
Reed players. Yes. And so all you do... in your free time is sit in the dark making reeds.
Yeah,
I've heard this about.
Maybe that's why my sister is so crazy.
Did
that
she
just
play
registered.
Oboe?
She did play oboe. Yeah. That's where it all started.
But yeah. I'll tell you, those double reed instruments are so beautiful, the sounds. Mm-hmm. So did you watch Mozart in the Jungle?
Yes.
Which I was so sad that they canceled that.
I know. That was a beautiful show. I loved it.
Yeah, and it featured our leading role. It was an oboist. How did she do? Because I'm assuming she doesn't actually play oboe.
Her embouchure wasn't the greatest.
No, I wouldn't.
But she wasn't terrible.
She wasn't. Fooled me. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, that's cool. So what musical instrument do you play, Katie?
I don't play an instrument.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
Singing is an instrument.
It is.
Yes.
It's not a physical.
Yes.
Meaning.
So what disciplines of music do you sing?
I'm just in voice lessons right now in my mm-hmm. school, and I'm mostly just focusing on musical theater and like trying to figure out where my voice lands, I guess. So I would mm-hmm. say I'm a developing musician.
And it's important. And I'm just going to take a wild stab that you're probably the only one sitting here that's still in school.
Yes. yes. I'm 20.
But it is important. I tell this to a lot of people that it's very important if you are looking for a career in theater. I'm going to make the wild assumption that you do mm-hmm. that you work on being a triple threat because I wasn't. My official tagline when I lived in New York was I was an actor who sings and moves well, which means I was an actor who could kind of carry a tune and couldn't dance a lick. but I oftentimes wish that I had stuck when I was younger with all my singing and mm-hmm. Dance mm-hmm. lessons, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, what were you? When were you in New York? We never really got. We started
there,
but then we moved
between
around.
2000 and 2009.
Okay,
I spent some time during that time up in New Haven in grad school
at Yale,
at the Yale School of Drama.
Awesome.
I used to tell people back in the day, it's not so much the case when they would say, "Should I go to college for theater?" And my answer was, "Unless it's Juilliard or Yale, no," because at the time, and I don't think Yale still has the Yale rep.
Oh, it does.
So there was Yale Rep was like a farm. It was it is an equity theater, and it was like a farm school for Yale. And
it is.
Juilliard had the acting company. I don't think the acting company exists anymore. So you went to Yale School of Drama.
I went to Yale School of Drama.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, I went there as a designer. Mm-hmm. So I have a degree in theater design and costume design specifically.
So did you also learn scenic and lighting design, or was
I
it
did.
Focused?
I studied I studied set design with Ming Cho Lee, one of the most the
amazing
best designers of the last 50 years. I mean, he was incredible. I studied costume design with Jane Greenwood and Jess Goldstein, who are two incredible award-winning Broadway and worldwide designers. Jennifer Tipton, lighting, and Stephen Strawbridge, who are both highly accomplished lighting designers. It was an incredible experience.
So when you were in New York, were you working on the street, off the street, off the street?
I was working. I did off-Broadway and off-Broadway and regional.
Cool. Yeah. Any particular theater off-Broadway?
Roundabout.
Mm-hmm. I worked at Roundabout.
Yeah.
But back in the day, so do you remember, do you know where the Upright Citizens Brigade is now?
Yeah.
That used to be Roundabout Second Stage.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of time down there.
Yeah.
It was under a Sloan's grocery store, I think, at the time.
Oh, wow.
Because you go downstairs to get to it. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I was a teaching artist with the Roundabout Theater as well. They had this really amazing program with high school kids in New York City where they would hire people to come in and teach these kids theater disciplines and help them produce a show. And it's kids in underserved communities
in
New York City. Yeah, it was great.
So how did you find yourself? Did you start as a performer? Move to design, get back to performing.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what happened. I was an acting kid since I was very young in elementary school and straight up through college. I mean, that was my goal.
Where did we go to elementary school? Where did you
elementary school in Michigan and Minnesota?
Part of Michigan?
Petoskey.
Okay, where is that?
It's here.
It's here. So my mom grew up in Muskegon. I went to Muskegon an awful lot.
Okay.
So for those of you on the radio, because this doesn't really work. So Michigan, you can look at where it is by the palm of your hand. And Muskegon is in the middle west side. And
Petoskey's at like the tip of your pinky finger if you're holding.
So are
up
you
your
near?
Left hand.
You're not near the UP, but you're close.
Close. Yeah. We drive up there sometimes.
Yeah.
But really, I think of Duluth, Minnesota as home.
Minnesota. We call that. Minnesota.
That's
where
all my family grew
People from Minnesota love it. And Duluth is cold.
Yes, very cold.
Yeah.
Very cold.
Do you miss it?
I do miss Duluth. Yeah. I miss the snow.
What brought you to Austin, Texas?
Oh, boy. Well, I lived in Miami for a few years.
So you wanted more heat.
No, I got married and I got married, had twins, and left New York to move down to Miami for my husband's business. And then I moved to Austin only a couple of years ago.
Well, we're happy to have you here.
Yeah.
And why Austin?
Well, my husband owned a production company in Miami, and he merged with a production company in Austin.
A production company that does what kind of work?
They do documentary television.
Awesome.
Like Screw Productions. Yeah, they just had a new show out on the Travel Channel. They started. They're bringing back Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, no, I don't believe it.
On the Travel Channel. Yep.
You got Katie.
I love
you got
that.
One viewer.
I'm so excited.
Shout out to Texas Screw Productions.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can. So the rules are less strict here. So you're totally able to command people to do things. So, that is great, and we love that there's production here because of tax laws. It's been going away,
yeah.
So we're happy to hear that.
Didn't it change though, or something changed? There was some kind of
it got worse
recently. Well, there was an incentive package.
Yeah, there's an incentive package, but it's not what it was.
It's not amazing.
No. Gotcha.
That has moved to Atlanta.
Yes,
yes.
Although who knows how long it's going to stay in Atlanta?
Oh, it won't stay. Yeah. No, it'll move around.
It's not looking good for Georgia.
Really?
No.
Their latest.
Yeah. No, Georgia. No. And if our lovely, from my political bringings, we want people to stop working in Georgia until they start.
Yeah, exactly.
Until they start treating people and especially women like human beings.
Agree 100%.
Wow, yeah. So
see, and it's something that I really have to think about because I'm about to graduate. I have one more year and then everybody moves. And so I have a lot of friends that are going to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And
if they are progressive thinkers, have them rethink.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it just doesn't make sense to go into a place where you're where your right to choose has just been stripped away to a point where you have no, you're not allowed to think at all.
Mm-hmm. And the industry is leaving as a result of it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet. Yeah.
So hopefully they'll change. And
wouldn't that be great if they all came to Austin?
It would be. But I have to say that our state is not a whole bunch better.
I agree with that.
So Katie, I can just tell by looking at you, probably from Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I just had a feeling.
Yes, I told you.
You did. We talked about it before we went on the air.
I am from Fort Worth.
So you grew up in Cowtown?
Yes, well, right next to Cowtown in Mansfield.
You're here for school. Do you consider that you still live in as Cowtown, as Fort Worth your home?
So I came here for school, but... Yeah, I guess I would call it my home just because that's where my family is still at. But I really like Austin. I enjoy living here just because of the balance of nature and city. So that's something, if I do move to New York, there's no nature there at all.
That is absolutely 100% incorrect.
Really?
Yeah. So I will tell you a story and then I'll dispel all your... Yeah. I mean, agree with me, don't you? I mean, Central Park is amazing.
Yes, I agree.
And just outside of New York,
Prospect Park is amazing.
I haven't seen that.
Fort Tryon Park is gorgeous. Yeah. Yep. If you get access to a car, you just drive up like 20 minutes.
You are in upstate, right?
People that live there will get mad if you call it upstate, but it's just north of the city where I live, like in Nyack and that area.
Okay.
It's gorgeous. But I moved to New York after my first year in college, and I remember sitting in a drunken stupor with a friend of mine in tears I thought I would never see grass or trees again. I just was convinced of it. New York is really gorgeous. And I remember one time, shortly after I moved, this was in the late 70s, I was walking through Central Park, and I was in a place. It's like all of a sudden I was in the middle of nowhere. There was dirt trails. You couldn't see anything. And
it was probably the Rambles.
It was exactly the Rambles, because I went and told a gay friend of mine at the time. This was in the height of the gay community before the AIDS crisis. And I said, I described this barrier, and they said, oh, you were in the Rambles, which is where all, I don't know if that happens now, but that's where all gay hookups took place.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So evidently, if I had taken my blinders off and looked around, I would have seen men everywhere with each other. But it is amazing. Strawberry Fields right at 72nd Street is amazing. Mm-hmm. But then there's Riverside Park. There's all these little pocket parks that are just gorgeous.
Yeah. That's good to know.
And then if you just walk through the city, so there are these little squares on the sidewalk that have trees, and some on the Upper West Side and others have full-grown old-growth trees that are just canopying the streets in New York City. So fear not. Nature is still there.
Thank you. No, because I would have been like you crying without seeing grass.
I was 100% sure that I was not going to see
it. That is really
funny. So do you have plans to move to New York?
I don't know yet. I still have a year, so I'm like giving myself that. It's just really, I guess it's just what I want to get into, which I do want to get more into the film side of things. But so I'm going to, I just went to New York for the first time, so that's why I didn't think.
Mazel Tov, did you see a show?
Yes, I saw. Oh, I saw Mean Girls on Broadway.
No, that's supposed
to
be
awesome.
It was
amazing. My dad went with me.
Things about it.
It was. Oh no, it was really good.
Yeah,
that's the only show I've ever seen there.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, and so I was. I was amazed, and when I was first in the city, I literally was like, "This is so overwhelming. I don't know how anyone could live here." 3 days later, I was like, oh my God, this place is amazing. Yeah.
It's New York is home to me. So I love it, love it, love it.
It's incredible. So I'm going to go check out LA for the first time in July. So we'll see how
that
goes.
You're interested in film, that seems like, or stay right here.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely encourage you to make a move somewhere.
Yes, I want to.
Outside of your little safe home space. So that's how you learn and grow.
Yes.
So Luke and Aaron, what were the first Broadway shows y'all saw ever?
Oh, geez.
Do you remember?
I don't.
I remember my first show.
No, I don't.
Really? So for most of us, that's sort of a moment.
I've seen so many now. I don't remember which was the first one.
Yeah, no, I hadn't seen any in almost 20 years up until more recently.
Okay. What was the last Broadway show you saw?
Oh, boy.
Come on, that should be easy.
I saw Carousel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cats. You scared me. No. You saw Carousel. That was like 2 seasons ago, right?
That was last year.
Last year.
About a year ago.
Uh-huh.
A year ago.
Yeah. Not one of my favorites.
No. Most recent.
Don't like Carousel.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's
don't
not
like Oklahoma.
Musical,
although
either.
I want to see this current Oklahoma.
I really want to see the Oklahoma on Broadway right now.
Yeah. What was your last one, Luke?
I don't know. The most recent thing I saw in New York that really made an impression on me was off Broadway. It was Waverly Gallery.
Oh yeah. So that was which was up for a lot of awards.
Yes, I just saw it a couple of months ago.
And
phenomenal.
Yeah, I've heard wonderful, wonderful.
The Alchemy
wonderful
Theater
things about.
In Austin is doing the Waverly Gallery. Yes. In
right.
September.
Oh, great.
And Luke will be in that cast.
Yay! No, okay, how well, good. Awesome. We will look forward to that. That would, I assume, also be a Austin premiere.
It will.
Or Texas
it
premiere,
will.
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah, well, great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us out here by the dumpsters. I apologize for the smell.
Best smelling dumpsters I've come across
well,
all day.
Well, we do. Every now and then we throw a little rose petals
that's
in there
good.
Just to like,
freshness.
Give it the fresh edge. But thank you guys so much. This is a great conversation.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate
yeah.
it. Okay, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
And I'll bet someday we get an Irish president.
And I'll bet someday we get an Irish president.